This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm pretty darn good. How are you?
I'm excited to be back for another episode of the 12 Nightmares Before Christmas.
Today?
It's your day.
It's day three. Three.
Woohoo.
Oh, one, two, three.
Three.
Yep. Three.
It's a trifecta so far.
It is a trifecta.
I always like so to far. Bet the trifecta at the horse race. That's, well, you're usually a sure winner. You don't win a lot, but, you know.
Yeah, I like it.
Sure winner.
I like it.
Two well, on... Slappy jalopy, please.
I run the trifecta me. But on bump.
Shh. I miss going to the horse races. I can't wait
me
until next year when this whole,
too.
I don't know if you've heard, but there's like some sort of pandemic or something going on.
It's like
around.
A, I don't know, something. All I know is you can't go outside. Now, normally I'd safely. Be all for that. But now that we're approaching, what is it, month 10? I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I'm telling you, when people tell me I can't do things, it's when I want to do them the most.
Oh, it's just, like I said, normally, hey, you got to stay home and watch Netflix. Okay.
Thank
Sign
you.
Me up. I can do what I do always and not have to feel guilty and nobody can pressure me.
Exactly.
But now, 10 months of this, I'm good.
Well, and to tell you the truth, at first it was hell for me because, you know, I'm pretty much an extrovert. And I love to go out and go to antique malls and go to estate sales, thrift stores, and just go out and be out of the house. Because if I'm in the house, I feel like I have to do housework. And at first, it was really hard for me. I was like jonesing. I needed a fix at the antique mall. But now, I don't think you could get me to go out if you tried. I've like become accustomed to this sluggish existence.
I know. Slug life.
Slug life.
Hashtag. Yep. I hear you, girl. I hear you.
Shall we get into your...
We shall. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Let's go. So today, for our third Nightmare Before Christmas, we are going to Pepperall, Massachusetts, which is located right outside Boston. I think it's about 30 miles, give or take. So in the fall of 1986, this quaint northeastern town would become the stuff of nightmares, and all at the hand of a teenager.
Ooh.
And let me just say, if I'm not mistaken, Jen, I think
teens
this
suck?
Is one of...
No.
Well, yes, that, but I think this is in your list of big fears,
uh-oh.
If I remember correctly. Yes.
Running out of nachos? No, teasing joke.
Sort of. You never know. Daniel LaPlante was born May 16th, 1970, and his home life was not exactly a happy one. Danny lived with his mother and stepfather, but would be sexually and psychologically abused by many of the adults in his life, and pretty much a lot of this was by his very own father. Now, Danny did not do well in school, as he suffered from dyslexia, but it was his poor hygiene, as well as some rather peculiar behavior, shall we say? That would land him in therapy with a psychiatrist. I guess he just chose really not to shower or bathe or take care of himself. And that led to, you know,
skin
as
infections.
Kids do.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not. I'm just going to say kids not really taking to him, not
oh,
liking
yeah.
him too much, you know.
And it's amazing how a lot of these killers have the same background as being
they really do.
Abused. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's some correlation to that.
I think there might be, Jen. I'm not sure. Danny began getting into trouble early in his teenage years. He would break into neighbors' homes and steal whatever he liked, whatever caught his eye he would take. But it wasn't just that. It was sort of, and I was trying to figure out how to put this into words, but I'll just tell you. He would move things around in the house to let people know that someone had been there.
Oh.
He kind of liked that creep factor.
Yeah,
that's
creepy.
Somebody was in their house, right? And he kind of, I mean, I don't want to say got off on that because he was a kid, but he enjoyed that part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Classmates would remark that Danny was weird and creepy, and they just got a weird vibe from him. Another thing that Danny liked to do was to, I guess, bother the people whose home he had burglarized. So he would get their number after he had, you know, broken their house, and he'd call them with prank phone calls. He'd do drive-bys. He just kind of liked to play that mental game. And you got to remember, this is a kid. He's like 15, 16 at this point, right?
A little
That's
cat
pretty,
and mouse, yeah.
Yeah, it's very bizarre, right?
A little antagonizing. Mm-hmm.
So just as he had done in the past, he obtained a phone number to what he thought was one of the victim's homes that he had burglarized. But instead, it belonged to a widower named Brian Andrews and his two teenage daughters, Annie and Jessica. Now, Brian's wife and the girl's mother had recently passed away due to cancer. So they were kind of struggling, having a hard time trying to get their life back on normal after suffering such a terrible loss, obviously. You know, these young girls lost their mother and they're left with their dad and they're trying to pick up the pieces. So Danny called the house and he began to strike up a friendship over the phone with Annie. And Annie and Danny are about the same age at this time, 15, 16 years old. And Danny finally got up the nerve to ask Annie out. Well, Annie, you know, was thrilled that Danny asked her out. She was thrilled to finally get to meet this boy that seemed so smart and so charming. And, you know, he described himself as handsome. And the way he described himself, obviously, as a teenage girl, she's thrilled to be going out with this hottie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the big night finally arrives, and Danny rang the doorbell. Annie runs to the door, opens it, and, well, Danny's not quite how he had described himself at all. Annie's face fell, but since she had already said she'd go out with him, she kept her word. Now, during the date, Danny would ask a lot of questions about Annie's mom, about the cancer, and how she had passed away, you know, sort of very, I would say, inappropriate questions for, mm-hmm. for a first date, even if you are a kid, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, Annie was nice, but it was obviously she wanted to go home. There was going to be no second date.
Yeah, I would
Danny,
think so.
Right?
It's
Danny
just inappropriate. I mean,
well, and just like knowing it's not like, are you okay?
It so wasn't how'd she long... die? Did she
yeah, what
suffer?
Was that like? Did
yeah.
She, what'd she look, you know, that just, you
Did
know.
You see her body? Yeah.
yeah it, things no, things that aren't right.
No, she has good instincts right there, not wanting to mm-hmm. see him again. Good for her.
So Danny, of course, was disappointed, Jen, but Danny was not exactly finished yet. Bum, bum, bum. Jessica and Annie were trying their best to heal from the loss of their mother, but they missed their mom so much. But something good had just started to happen. They believed that their mom was with them, that she was communicating with them.
Mm.
And, you know, they're young kids, so I'm sure this is sort of a coping strategy or mechanism, if you will.
Yeah. I know of people who have lost loved ones in their life,
mm-hmm.
and they tend to gravitate towards spiritualism. They tend to want to speak to mediums and contact
yeah.
their loved ones.
Looking,
I think
yeah,
it's a normal part of the grieving process to heal.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand that. I don't know mm-hmm. if I actually believe that it's true, but I totally understand what they're going through. Mm-hmm.
So like I said, That's I totally agree with you. And that plays right into how this all unfolds, you know. And they're mm-hmm. young girls. They're wanting this to be true.
Exactly.
Course.
They're willing it almost to be true.
They believed that their mom was with them, like I said, and communicating with them. They were convinced of this because of all the unexplained noises, the knocks, the bumps in the night. But you see, Jessica and Annie had decided this one night to do a seance, and they tried contacting their mother. And since that dark, creepy night in the basement, they believed their mom had, in fact, been communicating with them using these taps, knocks, and bangs.
Did they use Ouija board?
That was unclear. Mm-hmm. It was stated it was a seance, so I would say that very likely or
yeah.
some sort of other apparatus. You know, one's 16 and the other one's
I'm
a little
sure
bit
it was
her.
Parker Brothers Ouija board, yeah. Not
so
that
they
it
were,
matters, but just curious.
Yeah, yeah, I got you. The girls were convinced that they made contact with their dead mother. Their father was entirely not convinced whatsoever. their dad, Brian, tried to be understanding, you know, as the girls come to him and they're explaining this. But he tried to get the girls to realize this was not real and that their mother was gone. She was gone. She passed away. She was very sick, and it was actually better that she had left them. Now, the girls pleaded with their father that someone or something is making all these unexplained noises. Their father explained, the house is old. It's probably the house. It's creaky. It's an old house. We live in the Northeast, you know. So
the house is settling. That's what my father always told me. The house
That's what my mom always said, too.
Yeah.
Which is still out in the middle of the night. If I hear something like the windows pop, I jump 2 feet out of bed. Mm-hmm. Swear to God, I'm still a big chicken. I don't know if you know that, but anyway.
Oh, I know.
So the girls, they walk away with this information that their dad gave them. But, you know, they're not buying into that. And not only are they not buying into that, the noises did not stop. In fact, they increased, but only when Jessica and Annie were home alone. Lights would flicker. The doorbell would ring with no one there. Pipes were tinging as if somebody, you know, was hitting on them or something was banging around on there. They were getting louder and stronger, and the girls were, I mean, again, I'm a big chicken. I'd be moving. That would be it. I would be living in my car. I would not. Nope,
but they think it's their mother, right? So there
still,
would be.
I don't. That's great. And if you want to come visit me during the daytime, that's great. But not at nighttime when I'm by myself.
Yeah,
that's
please come when dad's home. Yeah,
exactly. Thank you.
And, love you, Mom, but can you make it?
And these noises were not, right?
Even I would jump out of my skin with that stuff. I can't.
Yeah, you just can't.
I just couldn't do it.
So one night, the girls get brave, and they decide to investigate. Now, again, like you said, they believe that this is their mother, right? So they go into the basement, and, I mean, honestly, they're scared. Can you imagine the hair on your arms? Or, you know, you go down to the dark basement. This is an older house outside
they're
of Boston.
They're also pretty damn brave, too.
Thank you. Thank you. Sometimes I got brave, too, because I was like, if I'm going to die, I just need to do it right now. So I would go confront things, prepare to die, I swear to God.
Oh, yeah. I would grab a knife from the butcher's block and,
And you're
luckily,
just like, okay,
didn't
here
hurt
we go.
Myself.
So they get in the basement. They're creeping along. They're, you know, the Jessica's holding on to Annie's arm. Annie's the oldest. When all of a sudden, one of the girls sees it and begins screaming. So they both turn around, there is a message that is scrawled on the wall in blood.
Oh, blood?
Yeah. Red stuff. Stay
okay.
with me here.
Gotcha.
Stay with
Looks
me.
Like blood.
Looks
Sorry.
Like blood. They thought it was blood. The police are called, and they come to check it out, and they discover that the message was actually ketchup, not blood.
Wow.
Now, furious and believing the girls are the ones that are doing this and not really understanding why, you know, their dad, Brian, is just upset. He's hoping this is just a phase. The girls have lost their mother. And, you know, obviously anybody would be having a hard time with it, especially little teenage girls, right? So he's starting to lose his patience with this nonsense.
I get that.
Sadly, things are not going to get any better. In December of 1986, the girls are home alone and they're enjoying a movie on the couch. They're just kind of, you know, hanging out, cozying, you know, Netflixing and watching movies. But
in 86?
Exactly. It's cable TV or VCRs.
So they're watching like Hots. And what else were we watching on
Sleepaway Camp, Friday the 13th, part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Porkies.
Yep. So the girls at home, enjoying a movie on the couch when all of a sudden the knocking returns. Once again, the girls go to investigate. And once again, there is a message scrawled on the wall. Come find me. Now, of course, they race out of the house. This is in the house. They've been in the house. How did that message get there? At least in the basement, you could kind of pretend that maybe they snuck in a window or whatever, right? So they are screaming their head off. They run out. They go to the neighbor's house. The neighbor calls their dad, who comes immediately home. When he arrives, he goes inside the house, and finally, he begins to realize that something is wrong. All the TVs in the house are in full volume, and he knows that the girls would not do that, right? They're in there watching a movie. That would just be, you know, dumb, and he knows
that they
wouldn't do that. Yeah. He slowly starts to creep through the house, trying to be as quiet as he can. You know, he's like, I'm gonna catch this. This is ridiculous, but I'm gonna figure out what's going on. He slowly climbs up the staircase. He carefully approaches the bedroom. and as he very slowly reaches for the door handle and softly pushes the door open, he takes a step in and immediately stops, unsure of what he is seeing. Standing in the room is a person, a man, in one of his dead wife's dresses.
What?
With a white wig on, holding a hatchet. The person, right? The person had makeup on his face, almost like a warrior going into battle. So war paint, or like, you know, the stripes that a warrior would have worn back in the day to go into war. Well, needless to say, Brian runs screaming out of the house.
Thank God. There's a crazy person inside. Yeah, get that out.
Thank you. So police are called and they show up again. Officers arrive and they go inside the house to look around. While one of the officers is inside investigating, something catches his eye. It's a sliver of light coming from a crawl space.
No.
In the house.
No, you're right. I hate this.
He reaches over and there's almost like a bookshelf or a table kind of blocking the crawl space entrance, almost on purpose, sort of. So he moves that away and there's a door. So he goes, he reaches to open it and gets quite the shock. Inside is a man with paint on his face, the very same man that Brian had run into up in the upstairs bedroom. Now, this man, Jen, here's your phobia. This man had not come for a visit. He wasn't hiding in
the
crawl space.
He was living in the walls.
He had been living in the crawl space for several months.
Nope. I don't do that.
Now, this man or boy was really 16-year-old Daniel LaPlante.
Oh, Lord.
What?
No. Where was his mother? I hate to be that person, but where
I'm
was
guessing
his mother?
What he would check in and out, sort of like.
She would have to be.
To say, like a treehouse, kind of. They found food wrappers. They found drinks and sodas. They found blankets, pillows. I mean, he obviously was making himself at home there, right?
Right.
So he was staying there, and it had not been. You know, the noises had been going on and going through all that. It wasn't a week. It wasn't weeks. It was several months, like 2 to 3 months.
I hope the father apologized to the daughters.
Sixteen-year-old Daniel LaPlante would be charged with breaking and entering, armed burglary, malicious injury to a property, and armed assault in a dwelling. Daniel was sent to Bridgewater Hospital to get a psych and medical evaluation.
Good.
And then he went to a juvenile detention center. Now, you got to remember, he's only 16. So while he's locked up, as you would suspect, or at least hope, the Andrews family was like, yeah, we're out of here.
Oh, yeah.
We're moving, right? It can't happen. They make arrangements to get the heck out of there.
Yeah, because if he could find his way in, there's nothing they could do to keep him out. You know what I mean? He's going to find his way back if he ever gets out.
He went on one date with Annie.
I know. Oh, my Lord. Do you think, I guess they didn't find anything mentally wrong with him at the hospital? Is that why they put him in the because I would think.
Well, I'm sure he just had to do some sort of. He was doing his time in the juvie center. He can't be.
But I would think if they had found him.
He was not charged as an adult, right?
Right.
So they did that and put him in a juvenile detention center. In October of 1987, the court decides that Daniel LaPlante should, in fact, be charged as an adult for those crimes he had committed earlier. Now, because of this, the whole reason they did this, to my understanding, is that so he would not be sitting rotting away in juvenile detention center. So you do have to age out of that, right?
Right.
And so the whole idea was that he would be charged as an adult. And then if he was found guilty or your cases are reviewed, your history's reviewed, and you may very well be out because you're a juvenile, right? And you don't have to continue doing time. So by doing this, also, you are being charged and therefore you get to post bail and therefore you get to
leave,
have that opportunity to get out. Exactly. So his mother did do it. She posted the bail for him and got him out. Now, this is October of 87. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In October of 87, he was let out on bond and returned with his mother to live with her and his stepfather. This would be a huge mistake. It's December 1st, 1987, Jen. Now, that's only 2 months after he was out on bond, when Andrew Gustafson comes home and he finds his pregnant wife, who's also the mother of his two young children, dead at home. She had been murdered in bed. It appeared that somebody had broken into their home and raped the mother and then shot her at point-blank range. Sadly, each of her children, which are 7-year-old Abigail and 5-year-old William, were found drowned in different bathrooms within the home.
Drowned?
A beer on the side table let police know that the perpetrator had enjoyed a beer either before or after these gruesome murders.
Oh. Drowning, of all things, is just
face down.
Almost more brutal than shooting them.
Mm-hmm. Violent. And how violent long it takes you. It's terrible.
Painful, and they're panicked, and horrible.
Police arrive on site. It's gruesome. I mean, it is bloody. It's terrible, you know? As they're in there talking, the two officers start to remember something. They seem to recall that Daniel LaPlante lived directly behind this home that they were in. And, you know, there was a little bit of woods that split them up. But basically, it was in the backyard. Mm-hmm. So just on a whim, they decided to pay a visit to Danny's house just to check on him, right? As officers are talking with his mother, Danny makes a break for it and runs. It's now become clear that Daniel LaPlante is now their number one suspect in these murders. The chase was on.
Bastard.
He's 16. So the call goes out. They're looking everywhere for Daniel LaPlante. Apparently, a few towns over from where this all happened, they believe that Danny LaPlante had kidnapped a woman trying to get into her car to steal her, but also her car, right? I think he wanted her car for the getaway. The woman, thankfully, was able to escape. Time marches on. It's about 2 days later. Finally, the police find Danny LaPlante. They've tracked him down. They believe that he's hiding sort of in this industrial compound. They go in. They do this like fake. They faked him out, basically. So they made it known that they all got there. There was a helicopter above, and they talked loudly to themselves. Okay, he's not here. It's all clear. Well, so they got rid of the helicopter. They did this whole ruse, right? And they trapped him basically in this building, and he was located in the dumpster. He was hiding in a dumpster in the building, basically.
Well, perfect place for him. It's where he deserves to be. He's trash.
So as they pull him out, he starts laughing hysterically. He's 16. He's laughing. He thinks it's funny.
Of course he does.
Obviously, the police officers don't think it's too funny. They immediately take him in and they take his clothing, go and inspect it. And on his clothing, they find a hair that was a match for Abigail, the baby girl that was drowned. So a year later, Danny LaPlante was sentenced, thank goodness, to 3 life sentences for the murder of the Gustafsons. 2017, Daniel LaPlante applied for a reduced sentence. During his court appearance, he made a statement and, you know, tried to appear remorseful, I guess, if that's what you want to say. And his statement is as follows. Words cannot fully capture what I've done. I murdered 3 innocent people. Because of me, a 5-year-old boy will never turn 6. There's a 7-year-old girl who will never turn 8. Because of me, a woman will never be able to give birth to her 3rd child. I robbed an unborn child of his first breath. A husband was never able to hear from his family, "I love you." I do not have the words to fully express my profound sorrow, but I am truly sorry for the harm I've caused. From the very essence of who I am, from the depth of my soul, I am sorry.
I don't believe
that. That was his quote that he stated to the Middlesex Superior Court, pleading to get out. Well, thank goodness, psychiatrist stepped in and insisted that this person, now a man, has no evidence of emotion. He has no feelings. And nope, sorry. So his application was denied.
Good.
And he again made a plea for early parole in 2019. That was again
denied.
Good. So he is still in the pokey, thank God, which is exactly where he needs to be.
He's only sorry he got caught. he's not sorry for taking a life.
No, not at all. Taking a life, taking three. Butt.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what else. Oh, so like the police, they thought for sure he, when he ran from them after committing the three murders, that he would possibly be headed back to hurt Annie and Jessica. And thank God that did not happen because
they had moved.
Well, they were in the process of moving, but they still, it didn't matter. It was like, you know.
Yeah. Could you imagine them hearing that, all right, he's in jail, and then you hear he's going to be paroled? Could you imagine?
No, I couldn't imagine finding this kid that you went on one date with and he's been living in your house for months. You loser. God.
Well, you know what? Thank God, though, she had enough smarts to like realize that after one date, he was
creepy. Not to mention, he lied about himself, though. Like, I'm sure he showed up and was a hot mess.
Ugh. Oh, can you imagine?
No.
Wow.
So that is the story of Daniel LaPlante. Yes.
And you hit it on the nail, man. People living inside the walls or in the ceiling of the house has to be one of the creepiest things to me. Stuff
and
nightmares.
And he orchestrated it to where he would almost like maneuver through the house, right? And so, you know, peeking through vents to see where people were and what they were doing so he knew when to be quiet. So, for instance, when Dad was home, he knew to be quiet.
And it was an older house, was it? It had to have been. Yeah.
Yeah. He could get to the basement, and then he could get all the way upstairs.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah. Creepy.
What a bastard,
creepy,
though.
Creepy. I'm and that's glad he's away. There's just something wrong with him. He's broken. He should never be out.
He is broken. Terribly broken. Well, he should also maybe receive some sort of help in prison.
Totally.
I mean,
totally.
He deserves to be in prison, but he also deserves to have some help to make his life a little bit better and not live. Who knows? I'm just speaking. I don't even know what I'm talking about, really. I don't know if he is getting help.
It's not really there, too. The U.S. prison system is pretty messed up.
I agree. Don't believe there's any reform going on.
No, not at all. Mm-mm.
Nope.
So anyway.
That's why the whole detention centers, like sending kids to detention, it doesn't help. It really doesn't. It just makes them worse.
Makes them learn better how to do their crimes
better.
Learn better. You know me, I talk real good, Jen.
You do. Woof, woof.
All right, Jen, until tomorrow, which is day 4, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Just off topic real quick. You know those little things, on the stickers on the back of everybody's car that says salt life, meaning they
does
love the
beach? Does that not look like?
Slut
does that
life.
Not look,
it looks like slut life.
Thank you. I was like, who would put that? It took me forever to realize. And I was like, who is advertising it for free? What is it? And then I was like, that is salt. Somebody, okay, that's why fonts matter.
They do.
I'm telling you.
Dude, the correct font choice is very important.
That looks, every time I'm just like, oh, Lord.
I know.
Come on. Uh-huh. All those doozies.
What was that other, what was that other one? You're driving Carmella crazy.
Oh, Last American Virgin. I love that one. Uh-huh. I saw that recently, not too long ago. It was on in the middle of the night and I've watched it and it didn't hold up that well, but I still love it.
I'm shocked that it didn't hold up that well.
You be quiet. This is what happens when Jen gets no sleep, people.
I got a good solid 3 hours.
It wasn't even three, but okay. Priscilla Gustafson. Oh, nope. I knew I'd get that name wrong. Gustafson. Nope. Gustafson.
Gustafson.
How do you
Gustafson?
Say it?
Gustafson.
Gustafson. What the fuck? How do you say that name? Gustafson. Isn't that the guy from Fargo? Wasn't his last name? It was, wasn't it? Gustafson.
I don't remember.
God dang it. I knew I'd get that wrong.
Gustafson?
I don't know. How do you say it? Hold on.
Depends on what the emphasis on the syllable is.
How do you say Gustafson? There we go. Hold on. Gustafson. Nope.
Was a son of Augustuson.
Gustafson.
Gustafson.
This episode is proudly sponsored by...
Yeah, you shut up. Gustafson. No, I'm going to say it once, and I'm going to go with Priscilla.
Me, they all are. All are. Okay. We couldn't live without that.
I don't know
and
why
yet
they
somehow I always
donate to the cause.
Sometimes
seriously.
Not use that.
So a year later, Danny LaPlante was sentenced, thank goodness, to 3 life sentences for the murder of the Gustafsons.
Sorry. What was the last name? What was
Shut
the name
up,
again?
Jennifer.
The Gustafsons?